It had taken several chapters of Dickens before Clary had finally succumbed to exhaustion and fallen asleep against Jace's shoulder. Half in a dream and half in reality, she recalled him carrying her downstairs and laying her down in the bedroom she'd woken up in the first day in the apartment. He had drawn the curtains and closed the door after him as he left, shutting the room into darkness, and she had fallen asleep to the sound of his voice in the hallway, calling for Sebastian. She dreamed of the frozen lake again, and of Simon crying out for her, and of a city like Alicante, but the demon towers were made of human bones and the canals ran with blood. She woke, twisted in her sheets, her hair a mass of tangles, and the light outside the window dimmed to a twilight darkness. At first, she thought the voices outside her door were part of the dream, but as they grew louder, she raised her head to listen, still groggy and half-tangled in the webbing of sleep. "Hey, little brother." It was Sebastian's voice, floating under her door from the living room. "Is it done?" There was a long silence, then Jace's voice, oddly flat and colorless. "It's done." Sebastian's breath drew in sharply. "And the old lady? She did as we asked? Made the cup?" "Yes." "Show it to me." A rustle, silence. Jace said, "Look, take it if you want it." "No." There was a curious thoughtfulness in Sebastian's tone. "You hold on to it for the moment. You did the work of getting it back after all, didn't you?" "But it was your plan." There was something in Jace's voice, something that made Clary lean forward and press her ear to the wall, suddenly desperate to hear more. "And I executed it, just as you wanted. Now, if you don't mind..." "I do mind." There was a rustle. Clary imagined Sebastian standing up, looking down at Jace from the inch or so that divided them in height. "There's something wrong. I can tell. I can read you, you know. I'm tired, and there was a lot of blood. Look, I just need to clean myself off, and to sleep, and..." Jace's voice died. "And to see my sister." "I'd like to see her, yes." "She's asleep, has been for hours." "Do I need to ask your permission?" There was a razored edge to Jace's voice, something that reminded Clary of the way he had once spoken to Valentine, something she had not heard in the way he spoke to Sebastian in a long time. "No," Sebastian sounded surprised, almost caught off guard. "I suppose if you want to barge in there and gaze wistfully at her sleeping face, go right ahead. I'll never understand why." "No," Jace said. "You never will." There was silence. Clary could so clearly picture Sebastian staring after Jace, a quizzical look on his face, that it took her a moment before she realized that Jace must be coming to her room. She had only time to throw herself flat on the bed and shut her eyes before the door opened, letting in a slice of yellow-white light that momentarily blinded her. She made what she hoped was a realistic waking-up noise and rolled over, her hand over her face. "What?" The door shut. The room was in darkness again. She could see Jace only as a shape that moved slowly toward her bed until he was standing over her. And she couldn't help remembering another night when he'd come to her room while she slept. Jace, standing by the head of her bed, still wearing his white morning clothes, and there was nothing light or sarcastic or distant in the way he was looking down at her. "I've been wandering around all night. I couldn't sleep, and I kept finding myself walking here, to you." He was only an outline now, an outline with bright hair that shone in the faint light that filtered from beneath the door. "Clary," he whispered. There was a thump, and she realized he had fallen to his knees by the side of her bed. She didn't move, but her body tightened. His voice was a whisper. "Clary, it's me." Her eyelids fluttered open, wide, and their gazes met. She was staring at Jace, kneeling beside her bed. His eyes were level with hers. He wore a long dark woolen coat, buttoned all the way to the throat, where she could see black marks, soundless, agility, accuracy, like a sort of necklace against his skin. His eyes were very gold and very wide, and as if she could see through them, she saw Jace, her Jace. The Jace who had lifted her in his arms when she was dying of ravener poison. The Jace who had watched her hold Simon against the rising daylight over the East River. The Jace who had told her about a little boy and the falcon his father had killed. The Jace she loved. Her heart seemed to stop altogether. She couldn't even gasp. His eyes were full of urgency and pain. "Please," he murmured. "Please believe me." She believed him. They carried the same blood, loved the same way. This was her Jace. As much as her hands were her own hands, her heart her own heart. But how? "Clary, shh." She began to struggle into a sitting position, but he reached out and pushed her back against the bed by her shoulders. "We can't talk now. I have to go." She grabbed for his sleeve, felt him wince. "Don't leave me." He dropped his head for just a moment. When he looked up again, his eyes were dry, but the expression in them silenced her. "Wait a few moments after I go," he whispered, "then slip out and up to my room. Sebastian can't know we're together, not tonight." He dragged himself to his feet, his eyes pleading. "Don't let him hear you." She sat up. "You're Steely. Leave me your Steely." Doubt flickered in his eyes. She held his gaze steadily, then put her hand out. After a moment, he reached into his pocket and took out the dully glowing implement. He laid it in her palm. For a moment, their skin touched, and she shuddered. Just a brush of the hand from this Jace was almost as powerful as all the kissing and tearing at each other they had done in the club the other night. She knew he felt it, too, for he jerked his hand away and began to back toward the door. She could hear him breathe, ragged and swift. He fumbled behind himself for the knob and let himself out, his eyes on her face until the very last moment, when the door closed between them with a decided click. Clary sat in the darkness, stunned. Her blood felt as if it had thickened in her veins, and her heart was having to work double time to keep beating. Jace. My Jace. Her hand tightened on the Steely. Something about it, its cold hardness, seemed to focus and sharpen her thoughts. She looked down at herself. She was wearing a tank top and pajama shorts. There were goosebumps on her arms, but not because it was cold. She set the tip of the Steely to her inner arm and drew it slowly down the skin, watching as a soundless rune spiraled across her pale blue-veined skin. She opened the door just a crack. Sebastian was gone, off to sleep most likely. There was music playing faintly from the television set, something classical, the sort of piano music Jace liked. She wondered if Sebastian appreciated music, or any sort of art. It seemed such a human capacity. Despite her concern about where he'd gone, her feet were carrying her toward the passage that led to the kitchen, and then she was through the living room and dashing up the glass steps, her feet making no noise as she reached the top and sprinted down the hall to Jace's room. Then she was jerking open the door and sliding inside, the door clicking shut behind her. The windows were open, and through them she could see rooftops and a curving slice of moon. A perfect Paris night. Jace's witchlight runestone sat on the nightstand beside his bed. It glowed with a dull energy that cast further illumination through the room. It was enough light for Clary to see Jace, standing between the two long windows. He had shrugged off the long black coat, which lay in a crumpled heap at his feet. She realized immediately why he had not taken it off when he'd come into the house, why he had kept it buttoned all the way to his throat, because beneath it he wore only a gray button-down shirt and jeans, and they were sticky and soaked with blood. Parts of the shirt were in ribbons, as if they had been slashed with a very sharp blade. His left sleeve was rolled up, and there was a white bandage wrapped around his forearm. He must have just done it, already darkening at the edges with blood. His feet were bare, his shoes kicked off, and the floor where he stood was splattered with blood, like scarlet tears. She set the steely down on his bedside table with a click. "Jace," she said softly. It suddenly seemed insane that there was this much space between them, that she was standing across the room from Jace, and that they weren't touching. She started toward him, but he held up a hand to ward her off. "Don't," his voice cracked. Then his fingers went to the buttons on his shirt, undoing them one by one. He shrugged the blood-stained garment off his shoulders and let it fall to the ground. Cleary stared. Lilith's rune was still in place, over his heart, but instead of shimmering red silver, it looked as if the hot tip of a poker had been dragged across his skin, charring it. She put her hand up to her own chest involuntarily, her fingers splayed over her heart. She could feel its beating, hard and fast. "Oh." "Yeah, oh," Jace said flatly. "This won't last, Clary. Me being myself again, I mean. Only as long as this hasn't healed."
I wondered," Clary stammered. "Before, while you were sleeping, I thought about cutting the rune like I did when we fought Lilith, but I was afraid Sebastian would feel it."
"He would have." Jace's golden eyes were as flat as his voice. "He didn't feel this because it was made with a dagger seethed in angel blood. They're incredibly rare. I've never even seen one in real life before." He ran his fingers through his hair. "The blade turned to hot ash after it touched me, but it did the damage it needed to do." "You were in a fight. Was it a demon? Why didn't Sebastian go with—" "Clary." Jace's voice was barely a whisper. "This, it'll take longer than an ordinary cut to heal, but not forever. And then I'll be him again. How much time before you go back to the way you were?"
"I don't know. I just don't know. But I needed to be with you, like this, like myself, for as long as I could."
He held out a hand to her stiffly, as if unsure of its reception.
"Do you think you could—"
She was already running across the room to him. She threw her arms around his neck. He caught her and swung her up, burying his face in the crook of her neck. She breathed him in like air. He smelled of blood and sweat and ashes and marks.
"It's you," she whispered. "It's really you."
He drew back to look at her. With his free hand, he traced her cheekbone gently. She had missed that, his gentleness. It was one of the things that had made her fall in love with him in the first place, realizing that this scarred, sarcastic boy was gentle with the things he loved.
"I missed you," she said. "I missed you so much."
He closed his eyes as if the words hurt. She put her hand to his cheek. He leaned his head into her palm, his hair tickling her knuckles, and she realized his face was wet too.
"The boy never cried again." "It's not your fault," she said.
She kissed his cheek with the same tenderness he had showed her. She tasted salt, blood, and tears. He still hadn't spoken, but she could feel the wild beat of his heart against her chest. His arms were tight around her, as if he never meant to let go. She kissed his cheekbone, his jaw, and finally his mouth, a light press of lips on lips. There was none of the frenzy there had been in the nightclub. It was a kiss meant to give solace, to say everything there was no time to say. He kissed her back, hesitant at first, then with greater urgency, his hand stealing up into her hair, winding the tresses between his fingers. Their kisses deepened, slowly, softly, the intensity growing between them as it always did, like a blaze that started with a single match and flared into a wildfire. She knew how strong he was, but she still felt a shock as he carried her to the bed and laid her down gently among the scattered pillows, sliding his body over hers, one smooth gesture that reminded her of what all those marks on his body were for. Strength, grace, lightness of touch. She breathed his breath as they kissed, each kiss drawn out now, lingering, exploratory. Her hands drifted over him, his shoulders, the muscles of his arms, his back. His bare skin felt like hot silk under her palms. When his hands found the hem of her tank top, she stretched her arms out, arching her back, wanting every barrier between them gone. The moment it was off, she pulled him back against her, their kisses fiercer now, as if they were struggling to reach some hidden place inside each other. She wouldn't have thought they could get any closer, but somehow, as they kissed, they wound themselves into each other like intricate thread, each kiss hungrier, deeper than the last. Their hands moved quickly over each other, and then more slowly, uncovering and unhurried. She dug her fingers into his shoulders when he kissed her throat, her collarbones, the star-shaped mark on her shoulder. She grazed his scar, too, with the backs of her knuckles, and kissed the wounded mark Lilith had made on his chest. She felt him shudder, wanting her, and she knew she was on the very brink of where there was no going back, and she didn't care. She knew what it was like to lose him now. She knew the black empty days that came after, and she knew that if she lost him again, she wanted this to remember, to hold on to, that she had been as close to him once as you could be to another person. She locked her ankles around the small of his back, and he groaned against her mouth, a soft, low, helpless sound. His fingers dug into her hips. "Cleary," he pulled away. He was shaking. "I can't. If we don't stop now, we won't be able to." "Don't you want to?" She looked up at him in surprise. He was flushed, tousled, his fair hair a darker gold where sweat had pasted it to his forehead and temples. She could feel his heart stuttering inside his chest. "Yes, it's just I've never..." "You haven't?" She was surprised. "Done this before?" He took a deep breath. "I have." His eyes searched her face, as if he were looking for judgment, disapprobation, even disgust. Clary looked back at him evenly. It was what she had assumed anyway. But not when it mattered. He touched her cheek with his fingers, feather light. "I don't even know how." Clary laughed softly. "I think it's just been established that you do. That's not what I meant." He caught her hand and brought it to his face. "I want you," he said. "More than I have ever wanted anything in my life. But I..." He swallowed. "Name of the angel. I'm going to kick myself for this later." "Don't say you're trying to protect me," she said fiercely. "Because I..." "It's not that," he said. "I'm not being self-sacrificing. I'm jealous."
"You're jealous?
Of who?"
"Myself."
His face twisted.
"I hate the thought of him being with you. Him. That other me. The one Sebastian controls."
She felt her face start to burn. "At the club. Last night." He dropped his head to her shoulder. A little bewildered, she stroked his back, feeling the scratches where her fingernails had torn his skin at the nightclub. The specific memory made her blush even harder. So did the knowledge that he could have gotten rid of the scratches with an Arazi if he'd wanted to. But he hadn't.
"I remember everything about last night," he said. "And it makes me crazy. Because it was me, but it wasn't. When we're together, I want it to be the real you. The real me. Isn't that what we are now?"
"Yes." He raised his head, kissed her mouth.
"But for how long? I could turn back into him any minute. I couldn't do that to you, to us. His voice was bitter. I don't even know how you can stand it, being around this thing that isn't me. Even if you go back to being that in 5 minutes, she said, it would have been worth it. Just to be with you like this again. Not to have it end on that rooftop. Because this is you, and even that other you, there's pieces of the real you in there. It's like I'm looking through a blurred window at you, but it's not the real you. And at least I know now. What do you mean? His hands tightened on her shoulders. What do you mean, at least you know? She took a deep breath. Jace, when we were first together, like really together, you were so happy for that first month, and everything we did together was funny and fun and amazing. And then it was like it just started draining out of you, all that happiness. You didn't want to be with me or look at me. I was afraid I was going to hurt you. I thought I was losing my mind. You didn't smile or laugh or joke. And I'm not blaming you. Lilith was creeping into your mind, controlling you, changing you. But you have to remember, I know how stupid this sounds. I never had a boyfriend before. I thought maybe it was normal, that maybe you were just getting tired of me. I couldn't. I'm not asking for reassurance, she said. I'm telling you, when you're like you are, controlled, you seem happy. I came here because I wanted to save you. Her voice dropped, but I started to wonder what I was saving you from. How could I bring you back to a life you seemed so unhappy with? Unhappy? He shook his head. I was lucky. So, so lucky. And I couldn't see it. His eyes met hers. I love you, he said. And you make me happier than I ever thought I could be. And now that I know what it's like to be someone else, to lose myself, I want my life back. My family. You. All of it. His eyes darkened. I want it back. His mouth came down on hers with bruising pressure, their lips open, hot and hungry, and his hands gripped her waist and then the sheets on either side of her, almost tearing them. He pulled back, panting. We can't. Then quit kissing me, she gasped. In fact, she ducked out from under his grip, grabbing for her tank top. I'll be right back. She pushed past him and darted into the bathroom, locking the door behind her. She flicked on the light and stared at herself in the mirror. She looked wild-eyed, her hair tangled, her lips swollen from kisses. She blushed and pulled her top back on, splashing cold water on her face, twisting her hair back into a knot. When she'd convinced herself she no longer looked like the ravished maiden from the cover of a romance novel, she went for the hand towels. Nothing romantic about that. Grabbing one and wetting it down, then rubbing it with soap. She came back out into the bedroom. Jace was sitting on the edge of the bed, in jeans and a clean, unbuttoned shirt, his tousled hair outlined by moonlight. He looked like a statue of an angel. Only, angels weren't usually streaked with blood. She moved to stand in front of him. All right, she said. Take off your shirt. Jace raised his eyebrows. I'm not going to attack you, she said impatiently. I can take the sight of your naked chest without swooning. Are you sure? He asked, obediently sliding the shirt off his shoulders. Because viewing my naked chest has caused many women to seriously injure themselves stampeding to get to me. Yeah, well, I don't see anyone here but me, and I just want to clean the blood off you. He leaned back obediently on his hands. Blood had soaked through the shirt he'd been wearing and streaked his chest and the flat planes of his stomach. But as she ran her fingers carefully over him, she could feel that most of his cuts were shallow. The arazi he'd put on himself earlier was already causing them to fade.
He turned his face up to her, eyes shut, as she ran the damp washcloth over his skin, blood pinking the white cotton. She scrubbed at the dry streaks on his neck, wrung out the cloth, dunked it in the glass of water on the nightstand, and went to work on his chest. He sat with his head tilted back, watching her as the cloth glided over the muscles of his shoulders, the smooth line of arms, forearms, hard chest scarred with white lines, the black of permanent marks.
"Clary," he said.
"Yes?"
The humor had gone from his voice. "I won't remember this," he said, "when I'm back, like I was, under his control. I won't remember being myself. I won't remember being with you or talking to you like this. So just tell me, are they all right? My family? Do they know what's happened to you? A little, and no, they're not all right."
His eyes closed.
"I could lie to you," she said, "but you should know. They love you so much, and they want you back."
"Not like this," he said. She touched his shoulder.
"Are you going to tell me what happened? How you got these cuts?"
He took a deep breath, and the scar on his chest stood out, livid and dark.
"I killed someone."
She felt the shock of his words go through her body like the recoil of a gun. She dropped the bloody towel, then bent down to retrieve it. When she looked up, he was staring down at her. In the moonlight, the lines of his face were fine and sharp and sad.
"Who?" she asked.
"You met her," Jace went on, each word like a weight.
"The woman you went to visit with Sebastian. The Iron Sister, Magdalena."
He twisted away from her and reached back to retrieve something tangled among the blankets of the bed. The muscles in his arms and back moved under the skin as he took hold of it and turned back to Clary, the object gleaming in his hand.
It was a clear, glassine chalice, an exact replica of the mortal cup, except that instead of being gold, it was carved of silvery white adamas. "Sebastian sent him, to get this from her tonight," Jay said. "And he also gave me the order to kill her. She wasn't expecting it. She wasn't expecting any violence, just payment in exchange. She thought we were on the same side. I let her hand me the cup, and then I took my dagger and I..."
He inhaled sharply, as if the memory hurt.
"I stabbed her. I meant it to be through the heart, but she turned and I missed by inches. She staggered back and grabbed for her work table. There was powdered adamas on it. She threw it at me. I think she meant to blind me. I turned my head away, and when I looked back, she had an aegis in her hand. I think I knew what it was. The light of it seared my eyes. I cried out as she drove it toward my chest. I felt a searing pain in the mark, and then the blade shattered."
He looked down and gave a mirthless laugh.
"The funny thing is, if I'd been wearing gear, this wouldn't have happened. I didn't, because I didn't think it would be worth the bother. I didn't think she could hurt me. But the Aegis burned the mark, Lilith's mark, and suddenly I was back in myself, standing there, over this dead woman with a bloody dagger in my hand and the cup in the other. I don't understand. Why did Sebastian tell you to kill her? She was going to give the cup to you, to Sebastian. She said..."
Jace expelled a ragged breath.
"Do you remember what Sebastian said about the clock in the old town square in Prague? That the king had the clockmaker's eyes put out after he made it, so he could never make anything as beautiful again," Clary said. "But I don't see. Sebastian wanted Magdalena dead so she could never make anything like this again," said Jace. "So she could never tell."
"Tell what?" She put her hand up, took hold of Jace's chin, and drew his face down so that he was looking at her.
"Jace, What is Sebastian really planning on doing? The story he told in the training room about wanting to raise demons so he could destroy them. Sebastian wants to raise demons, all right. Jace's voice was grim. One demon in particular. Lilith. But Lilith is dead. Simon destroyed her. Greater demons don't die. Not really. Greater demons inhabit the spaces between worlds, the great void, the emptiness. What Simon did was shatter her power, send her in shreds back to the nothingness she came from. But she'll slowly reform there, be reborn. It would take centuries, but not if Sebastian helps her. A cold feeling was growing in the pit of Clary's stomach. Helps her how? By summoning her back to this world. He wants to mix her blood and his in the cup, and create an army of dark Nephilim. He wants to be Jonathan Shadowhunter reincarnated, but on the side of the demons, not the angels. An army of dark Nephilim? The two of you are tough, but you're not exactly an army. There are about 40 or 50 Nephilim who either were once loyal to Valentine or who hate the current direction of the Clave and are open to hearing what Sebastian has to say. He's been in contact with them. When he raises Lilith, they'll be there. Jace took a deep breath. And after that, with the power of Lilith behind him, who knows who else will join his cause? He wants a war. He's convinced he'll win it. And I'm not so sure he won't. For every dark Nephilim he makes, he will grow in power. Add that to the demons he's already made allegiances with, and I don't know if the Clave is prepared to withstand him. Clary dropped her hand. Sebastian never changed. Your blood never changed him. He's exactly like he always was. Her eyes flicked up to Jace's. But you lied to me too. He lied to you. Her mind was whirling. I know that Jace isn't you. He thinks it's for your own good, and you'll be happier in the end, but he did lie to you. And I would never do that. The Aegis, Clary said. If it can hurt you, but Sebastian can't feel it, could it kill him, but not hurt you? Jace shook his head. I don't think so. If I had an Aegis, I might be willing to try, but no. Our life forces are tied together. An injury is one thing. If he were to die... His voice hardened. You know the easiest way to end this. Put a dagger in my heart. I'm surprised you didn't do it while I was sleeping. Could you, if it were me? Her voice shook. I believe there is a way to make this right. I still believe it. Give me your Steely, and I'll make a portal. You can't make a portal from inside here, said Jace. It won't work. The only way in and out of this apartment is through the wall downstairs, by the kitchen. It's the only place you can move the apartment from, too. Can you move us to the Silent City? If we go back, the Silent Brothers can figure out a way to separate you from Sebastian. We'll tell the Clave his plan so they'll be prepared. I could move us to one of the entrances, Jace said. And I will. I'll go. We'll go together. But just so there won't be any untruth between us, Cleary, you have to know they'll kill me. After I tell them what I know, they'll kill me. Kill you? No, they wouldn't. Cleary, his voice was gentle. As a good shadow hunter, I ought to volunteer to die to stop what Sebastian is going to do. As a good shadow hunter, I would. But none of this is your fault. Her voice rose, and she forced it back down, not wanting Sebastian downstairs to hear. You can't help what's been done to you. You're a victim in this. It's not you, Jace. It's someone else. Someone wearing your face. You shouldn't be punished. It's not a matter of punishment. It's practicality. Kill me, Sebastian dies. It's no different from sacrificing myself in battle. It's all well and good to say I didn't choose this. It has happened, and what I am now, myself, will be gone again soon enough. And Clary, I know it doesn't make sense, but I remember it. I remember all of it. I remember walking with you in Venice, and that night at the club, and sleeping in this bed with you. And don't you get it? I wanted this. This is all I ever wanted. To live with you like this. Be with you like this. What am I supposed to think when the worst thing that has ever happened to me gives me exactly what I want? Maybe Jace Lightwood can see all the ways this is wrong and messed up, but Jace Wayland, Valentine's son, loves this life. His eyes were wide and gold as he looked at her, and she was reminded of Raziel, of his gaze that seemed to hold all the wisdom and all the sadness in the world. "And that's why I have to go," he said, "before this wears off, before I'm him again." "Go where?" "To the Silent City. I have to turn myself in. And the cup, too." Part 3. All is changed. All changed, changed utterly. A terrible beauty is born. William Butler Yeats. Easter, 1916. Chapter 18. Raziel.
Clary?
Simon sat on the back porch steps of the farmhouse, looking down the path that led through the apple orchard and down to the lake. Isabel and Magnus were on the path, Magnus glancing toward the lake and then up at the low mountains ringing the area. He was making notes in a small book with a pen whose end glowed a sparkling blue-green. Alex stood a little distance away, looking up at the trees lining the ridge of the hills that separated the farmhouse from the road. He seemed to be standing as far from Magnus as he could, while remaining in earshot. It seemed to Simon, the first to admit that he was not that observant about these things, that despite the joking around in the car, a perceptible distance had come between Magnus and Alec recently, one he couldn't quite put a finger on, but he knew it was there. Simon's right hand was cradled in his left, his fingers circling the gold ring on his finger.
"Clary, please."
He'd been trying to reach her every hour since he'd gotten the message from Maya about Luke. He'd gotten nothing, not a flicker of response.
"Clary, I'm at the farmhouse. I'm remembering you here, with me."
It was an unseasonable warm day, and a faint wind rustled the last of the leaves in the tree branches. After spending too long wondering what sort of clothes you were supposed to wear to meet angels in, a suit seemed excessive, even if he did have one left over from Jocelyn and Luke's engagement party. He was in jeans and a t-shirt, his arms bare in the sunlight. He had so many happy sunlit memories attached to this place, this house. He and Clary had come up here with Jocelyn almost every summer for as long as he could remember. They would swim in the lake, Simon would tan brown, and Clary's fair skin would burn over and over. She'd get a million more freckles on her shoulders and arms. They'd play apple baseball in the orchard, which was messy and fun, and Scrabble and poker in the farmhouse, which Luke always won.
"Clary, I'm about to do something stupid and dangerous, and maybe suicidal. Is it so bad I want to talk to you one last time? I'm doing this to keep you safe, and I don't even know if you're alive for me to help you. But if you were dead, I'd know, wouldn't I? I'd feel it."
"All right, let's go," Magnus said, appearing at the foot of the steps. He eyed the ring on Simon's hand, but made no comment. Simon stood up and brushed off his jeans, then led the way down the wandering path through the orchard.
The lake sparkled up ahead like a cold blue coin. As they neared it, Simon could see the old dock sticking out into the water, where once they had tied up kayaks before a big piece of the dock had broken off and drifted away. He thought he could almost hear the lazy hum of bees and feel the weight of summer on his shoulders. As they reached the lake's edge, he twisted around and looked up at the farmhouse. White-painted clapboard with green shutters and an old covered sun porch with tired white wicker furniture on it. "You really liked it here, huh?" Isabel said. Her black hair snapped like a banner in the breeze off the lake. "How can you tell?" "Your expression," she said, "like you're remembering something good." "It was good," Simon said. He reached up to push his glasses up his nose, remembered he no longer wore them, and lowered his hand. "I was lucky." She looked down at the lake. She was wearing small gold hoop earrings. One was tangled in a bit of her hair, and Simon wanted to reach over and free it, to touch the side of her face with his fingers. "And now you're not?" He shrugged. He was watching Magnus, who was holding what looked like a long, flexible rod and drawing in the wet sand at the lake's edge. He had the spell book open and was chanting as he drew. Alec was watching him, with the expression of someone watching a stranger. "Are you scared?" Isabel asked, moving slightly closer to Simon. He could feel the warmth of her arm against his. "I don't know. So much of being scared is the physical feeling of it. Your heart's beating up, sweating, your pulse racing. I don't get any of that." "That's too bad," Isabel murmured, looking at the water. "Guys getting all sweaty is hot." He shot her a half smile. It was harder than he thought it would be. Maybe he was scared. "That's enough of your sass and back talk, missy." Isabel's lip quivered as if she were about to smile. Then she sighed. "You know what it never even crossed my mind I wanted," she said. "A guy who could make me laugh." Simon turned toward her, reaching for her hand, not caring for the moment that her brother was watching. "Issy." "All right," Magnus called out. "I'm done. Simon, over here." They turned. Magnus was standing inside the circle, which was glowing with a faint white light. It was really two circles, a slightly smaller one inside a larger one, and in the space between the circles, dozens of symbols had been scrawled. They too glowed a steely blue white like the reflection off the lake. Simon heard Isabel's soft intake of breath, and he stepped away before he could look at her. It would just make it all harder. He moved forward, over the border of the circle, into its center, beside Magnus. Looking out from the center of the circle was like looking through water. The rest of the world seemed wavering and indistinct. "Here." Magnus shoved the book into his hands. The paper was thin, covered in scrawled runes, but Magnus had taped a printout of the words, spelled out phonetically, over the incantation itself. "Just sound these out," he muttered. "It should work." Holding the book against his chest, Simon slipped off the gold ring that connected him to Clary and handed it to Magnus. "If it doesn't," he said, wondering where his strange calm was coming from. "Someone should take this. It's our only link to Clary and what she knows." Magnus nodded and slid the ring onto his finger. "Ready, Simon?" "Hey," said Simon. "You remembered my name." Magnus shot him an unreadable glance from his green-gold eyes and stepped outside the circle. Immediately, he was blurry and indistinct, too. Alec joined him on one side, Isabel on the other. Isabel was hugging her elbows, and even through the wavering air, Simon could tell how unhappy she looked. Simon cleared his throat. "I guess you guys had better go." But they didn't move. They seemed to be waiting for him to say something else. "Thanks for coming here with me," he said finally, having racked his brain for something meaningful to say. They seemed to be expecting it. He wasn't the sort who made big farewell speeches or bid people dramatic goodbyes. He looked at Alec first. Alec? I always liked you better than I liked Jace. He turned to Magnus. Magnus, I wish I had the nerve to wear the kind of pants you do. And last, Izzy. He could see her watching him through the haze, her eyes as black as obsidian. Isabel, Simon said. He looked at her. He saw the question in her eyes, but there seemed nothing he could say in front of Alec and Magnus, nothing that would encompass what he felt. He moved back toward the center of the circle, bowing his head. Goodbye, I guess. He thought they spoke back to him, but the wavering haze between them blurred their words. He watched as they turned, retreating up the path through the orchard, back toward the house until they had become dark specks, until he could no longer see them at all. He couldn't quite fathom not talking to Clary one last time before he died. He couldn't even remember the last words they'd exchanged. And yet, if he closed his eyes, he could hear her laughter drifting over the orchard. He could remember what it had been like before they had grown up and everything had changed. If he died here, perhaps it would be appropriate. Some of his best memories were here, after all. If the angel struck him down with fire, his ashes could sift through the apple orchard and over the lake. Something about the idea seemed peaceful. He thought of Isabel, then of his family, his mother, his father, and Becky. Clary, he thought lastly, wherever you are, you're my best friend. You'll always be my best friend. He raised the spell book and began to chant. No! Clary stood up, dropping the wet towel. Jace, you can't! They'll kill you! He reached for a fresh shirt and shrugged it on, not looking at her as he did up the buttons. They'll try to separate me from Sebastian first, he said, though he didn't sound as if he quite believed it. If that doesn't work, then they'll kill me. Not good enough. She reached for him, but he turned away from her, jamming his feet into boots. When he turned back, his expression was grim. I don't have a choice, Clary. This is the right thing to do. It's insane. You're safe here. You can't throw away your life. Saving myself is treason. It's putting a weapon into the hands of the enemy. Who cares about treason or the law? She demanded. I care about you. We'll figure this out together. We can't figure this out. Jace pocketed the steely on the nightstand, then caught up the mortal cup. Because I'm only going to be me for a little while longer. I love you, Clary. He tilted her face up and kissed her, lingeringly. Do this for me, he whispered. I absolutely will not, she said. I will not try to help you get yourself killed. But he was already striding toward the door. He drew her with him, and they stumbled down the corridor, speaking in whispers. This is crazy, Clary hissed, putting yourself in the path of danger. He blew out an exasperated breath. As if you don't. Right, and it makes you furious, she whispered as she raced after him down the staircase. Remember what you said to me in Alicante. They had reached the kitchen. He put the cup down on the counter, reaching for his steely. I had no right to say that, he told her. Clary, this is what we are. We're shadow hunters. This is what we do. There are risks we take that aren't just the risks you find in battle. Clary shook her head, clutching both his wrists. I won't let you. A look of pain crossed his face. Clarissa, She drew a deep breath, barely able to believe what she was about to do. But in her mind was the image of the morgue in the Silent City, of Shadowhunter bodies stretched out on marble slabs, and she could not bear for Jace to be one of them. Everything she had done, coming here, enduring everything she had endured, had been to save his life, and not just for herself. She thought of Alec and Isabel, who had helped her, and Maris, who loved him. And almost without knowing she was about to do it, she raised her voice and called out.
Jonathan!
She screamed.
Jonathan Christopher Morgenstern!
Jace's eyes widened into circles.
Clary!
He began, but it was too late already. She had let go of him and was backing away. Sebastian might already be coming. There was no way to tell Jace that it wasn't that she trusted Sebastian, but that Sebastian was the only weapon she had at her disposal that could possibly make him stay. There was a flash of movement, and Sebastian was there. He hadn't bothered with running down the stairs, just flipped himself over the side and landed between them. His hair was sleep must. He wore a dark t-shirt and black pants, and Clary wondered distractedly if he slept in his clothes. He glanced between Clary and Jace, his black eyes taking in the situation.
"Lovers spat?" he inquired.
Something glinted in his hand.
A knife?
Clary's voice shook. "His rune's damaged. Here." She put her hand over her heart. "He's trying to go back, to give himself up to the Clave." Sebastian's hand shot out and grabbed the cup out of Jace's hand. He slammed it down on the kitchen counter. Jace, still white with shock, watched him. He didn't move a muscle as Sebastian stepped close and took Jace by the front of the shirt. The top buttons on the shirt popped open, baring his collar, and Sebastian slashed the point of his stele across it, gashing an Arazi into the skin. Jace bit down on his lip, his eyes full of hatred as Sebastian released him and took a step back, stele in hand.
"Honestly, Jace," he said, "the idea that you thought you could get away with something like that just knocks me out."
Jace's hands tightened into fists as the Arazi, black as charcoal, began to sink into his skin. His words were eked out, breathless.
"Next time you want to be knocked, I'd be happy to help you. Maybe with a brick."
Sebastian made a tisk noise. "You'll thank me later. Even you have to admit, this death wish of yours is a little extreme." Clary expected Jace to snap back at him again, but he didn't. His gaze traveled slowly across Sebastian's face. For that moment, there was only the two of them in the room, and when Jace spoke, his words came cold and clear.
"I won't remember this later," he said, "but you will. That person who acts like your friend?"
He took a step forward, closing the space between himself and Sebastian.
"That person who acts like they like you? That person isn't real. This is real. This is me. And I hate you. I will always hate you. And there is no magic and no spell in this world or any other that will ever change that."
For a moment, the grin on Sebastian's face wavered, but Jace didn't. Instead, he tore his gaze from Sebastian and looked at Clary.
"I need you to know," he said, "the truth. I didn't tell you all the truth."
"The truth is dangerous," said Sebastian, holding the stele before him like a knife.
"Be careful what you say."
Jace winced. His chest was rising and falling rapidly. It was clear that the healing of the rune on his chest was causing him physical pain.
"The plan," he said, "to raise Lilith, to make a new cup, to create a dark army. That wasn't Sebastian's plan. It was mine."
Clary froze.
"What?"
"Sebastian knew what he wanted," said Jace, "but I figured out how he could do it.
a new mortal cup. I gave him that idea. He jerked in pain. She could imagine what was happening under the cloth of his shirt, the skin knitting together, healing, Lilith's rune whole and shining once again. Or, should I say, he did. That thing that looks like me but isn't. He'll burn down the world if Sebastian wants him to, and laugh while he's doing it. That's what you're saving, Clary. That. Don't you understand? I'd rather be dead. His voice choked off as he doubled over. The muscles in his shoulders tightened as ripples of what looked like pain went through him. Clary remembered holding him in the silent city as the brothers rooted around his mind for answers. Now he looked up, his expression bewildered. His eyes shifted first not to her, but to Sebastian. She felt her heart plummet, though she knew this was only her own doing. "What's going on?" Jay said. Sebastian grinned at him. "Welcome back." Jace blinked, looking momentarily confused, and then his gaze seemed to slide inward, the way it did whenever Clary tried to bring up something he couldn't process. Max's murder, the war in Alicante, the pain he was causing his family. "Is it time?" he said. Sebastian made a show of looking at his watch. "Just about. Why don't you go on ahead and we'll follow? You can start getting things ready." Jace glanced around. "The cup. Where is it?" Sebastian took it off the kitchen counter. "Right here." "Feeling a little absent-minded?" Jace's mouth curled at the corner, and he grabbed the cup back, good-naturedly. There was no sign of the boy who had stood in front of Sebastian moments ago and told him he hated him. "All right, I'll meet you there." He turned to Clary, who was still frozen in shock, and kissed her cheek. "And you." He drew back and winked at her. There was affection in his eyes, but it didn't matter. This was not her Jace. Very clearly not her Jace. And she watched numbly as he crossed the room. His stele flashed, and a door opened in the wall. She caught a glimpse of sky and rocky plain, and then he stepped through it and was gone. She dug her nails into her palms. "That thing that looks like me, but isn't? He'll burn down the world if Sebastian wants him to, and laugh while he's doing it. That's what you're saving, Clary. That. Don't you understand? I'd rather be dead." Tears burned at the back of her throat, and it was all she could do to hold them off as her brother turned to her, his black eyes very bright. "You called for me," he said. "He wanted to give himself up to the Clave," she whispered, not sure who she was defending herself to. She had done what she'd had to, used the only weapon at hand, even if it was one she despised. They would have killed him. "You called for me," he said again, and took a step toward her. He reached out and lifted a long lock of her hair away from her face, tucking it back behind her ear. "He told you then? The plan? All of it?" She fought back a shiver of revulsion. "Not all of it. I don't know what's happening tonight. What did Jace mean, it's time?" He leaned down and kissed her forehead. She felt the kiss burn, like a brand between her eyes. "You'll find out," he said. "You've earned the right to be there, Clarissa. You can watch it all from your place at my side, tonight, at the seventh sacred site. Both of Valentine's children, together, at last." Simon kept his eyes on the paper, chanting out the words Magnus had written for him. They had a rhythm to them that was like music, light and sharp and fine. He was reminded of reading aloud his Haftorah portion during his bar mitzvah, though he had known what the words meant then, and now he didn't.
As the chant went on, he felt a tightening around him, as if the air were becoming denser and heavier. It pressed down on his chest and shoulders. The air was growing warmer as well. If he were human, the heat might have been unbearable. As it was, he could feel the burn of it on his skin, singeing his eyelashes, his shirt. He kept his eyes fixed on the paper in front of him as a bead of blood ran from his hairline to drip onto the paper. And then he was done. The last of the words, Raziel, were spoken, and he lifted his head. He could feel blood running down his face. The haze around him had cleared, and in front of him he saw the water of the lake, blue and sparkling, as untroubled as glass. And then it exploded. The center of the lake turned gold, then black. Water rushed away from it, pouring toward the edges of the lake, flying into the air until Simon was staring at a ring of water, like a circle of unbroken waterfalls, all shimmering and pouring upward and downward, the effect bizarre and strangely beautiful. Water droplets shivered down onto him, cooling his burning skin. He tipped his head back, just as the sky went black, all the blue of it gone, eaten up in a sudden shock of darkness and clamoring gray clouds. The water splashed back down into the lake, and from its center, the greatest density of its silver, rose a figure all of gold. Simon's mouth went dry. He had seen countless paintings of angels, believed in them, had heard Magnus's warning, and still he felt as if he had been struck through with a spear, as before him a pair of wings unfolded. They seemed to span the sky. They were vast, white and gold and silver, the feathers of them set with burning golden eyes. The eyes regarded him with scorn. Then the wings lifted, scattering clouds before them, and folded back, and a man, or the shape of a man, towering and many stories tall, unfolded itself and rose. Simon's teeth had started to chatter. He wasn't sure why, but waves of power, of something more than power, of the elemental force of the universe, seemed to roll off the angel as he rose to his full height. Simon's first and rather bizarre thought was that it looked as if someone had taken Jace and blown him up to the size of a billboard. Only, he didn't quite look like Jace at all. He was gold all over, from his wings to his skin to his eyes, which had no whites at all, only a sheen of gold like a membrane. His hair was gold and looked cut from pieces of metal that curled like wrought ironwork. He was alien and terrifying. Too much of anything could destroy you, Simon thought. Too much darkness could kill, but too much light could blind. "Who dares to summon me?" The angel spoke in Simon's mind, in a voice like great bells sounding. Tricky question, Simon thought. If he were Jace, he could say, one of the Nephilim. And if he were Magnus, he could say he was one of Lilith's children and a high warlock. Clary and the angel had already met, so he supposed they'd just chum it up. But he was Simon, without any titles to his name, or any great deeds in his past. "Simon Lewis," he said finally, setting the spellbook down and straightening up. "Knight's child, and your servant."
"My servant?"
Raziel's voice was frozen with icy disapproval.
"You summon me like a dog and dare to call yourself my servant? You shall be blasted from this world, that your fate may serve as a warning to others not to do likewise. It is forbidden for my own Nephilim to summon me. Why should it be different for you, Daylighter?"
Simon supposed he should not be shocked that the angel knew what he was, but it was startling nevertheless. As startling as the angel's size. Somehow, he had thought Raziel would be more human.
I...
Do you think because you carry the blood of one of my descendants, I must show you mercy? If so, you have gambled and lost. The mercy of heaven is for the deserving, not for those who break our covenant laws. The angel raised a hand, his finger pointed directly at Simon. Simon braced himself. This time, he did not try to say the words, only thought them. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one.
What mark is that?
Raziel's voice was confounded.
On your forehead, child.
It is the mark, Simon stammered. The first mark. The mark of Cain. Raziel's great arm lowered slowly.
I would kill you, but the mark prevents it. That mark was meant to be set between your brows by heaven's hand, yet I know it was not. How can this be?
The angel's obvious bafflement emboldened Simon.
One of your children, the Nephilim, he said. One especially gifted. She set it there, to protect me.
He took a step closer to the edge of the circle. Raziel, I come to ask a favor of you, in the name of those Nephilim. They face a grave danger. One of their own has been turned to darkness, and he threatens all the rest. They need your help.
I do not intervene.
But you did intervene, Simon said. When Jace was dead, you brought him back. Not that we're all not really happy about that, but if you hadn't, none of this would be happening. So in a way, it rests on you to set it right.
I may not be able to kill you, Raziel mused, but there is no reason I should give you what you want.
I haven't even said what I want, said Simon.
You want a weapon, something that can sever Jonathan Morgenstern from Jonathan Herondale. You would kill the one and preserve the other. Easiest, of course, is simply kill both. Your Jonathan was dead, and perhaps death longs for him still, and he for it. Has that ever crossed your mind?
No, said Simon. I know we're not much compared to you, but we don't kill our friends. We try to save them. If heaven didn't want it that way, we ought never have been given the ability to love.
He shoved his hair back, bearing the mark more fully.
No. You don't need to help me. But if you don't, there's nothing stopping me from calling you up again and again, now that I know you can't kill me. Think of it as me leaning against your heavenly doorbell. Forever. Raziel, incredibly, seemed to chuckle at that.
You are stubborn, he said. A veritable warrior of your people, like him whose name you bear, Simon Maccabeus. And as he gave everything for his brother Jonathan, so shall you give everything for your Jonathan. Or are you not willing?
It's not just for him, said Simon, a little dazed. But yes, whatever you want, I will give it to you.
If I give you what you want, you will also vow never to bother me again?
I don't think, said Simon, that will be a problem.
Very well, said the angel. I will tell you what I desire. I desire that blasphemous mark on your forehead. I would take the mark of Cain from you, for it was never your place to carry it.
But if you take the mark, then you can kill me, Simon said. Isn't it the only thing standing between me and your heavenly wrath?
The angel paused to consider for a moment.
I shall swear not to harm you, whether you bear the mark or not.
Simon hesitated.
The angel's expression turned thunderous.
The vow of the angel of heaven is the most sacred there is. Do you dare to distrust me, Downworlder?
I,
Simon paused for an excruciating moment. His eyes were filled with the memory of Clary standing on her tiptoes as she pressed the steely to his forehead. The first time he had seen the mark work, when he had felt like the conductor for a lightning bolt, sheer energy passing through him with deadly force. It was a curse, one that had terrified him and made him an object of desire and fear. He had hated it. And yet now, faced with giving it up, the thing that made him special. He swallowed hard. Fine. Yes. I agree. The angel smiled, and his smile was terrible, like looking directly into the sun.
Then I swear not to harm you, Simon Maccabeus.
Lewis, Simon said. My last name is Lewis.
But you are of the blood and faith of the Maccabees. Some say the Maccabees were marked by the hand of God. In either case, you are a warrior of heaven, Daylighter, whether you like it or not.
The angel moved. Simon's eyes watered. Farazael seemed to draw the sky with him like a cloth, in swirls of black and silver and cloud white. The air around him shuddered. Something flashed overhead like the glint of light off metal, and an object struck the sand and rocks beside Simon with a metallic clatter. It was a sword. Nothing special to look at, either. A beaten-up-looking old iron sword with a blackened hilt. The edges were ragged, as if acid had eaten at them, though the tip was sharp. It looked like something that an archaeological dig might have turned up, that hadn't been properly cleaned yet. The angel spoke.
Once when Joshua was near Jericho, he looked up and saw a man standing before him with a drawn sword in his hand. Joshua went to him and said, "Are you one of us or one of our adversaries?" He replied, "Neither, but as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come."
Simon glanced down at the unprepossessing object at his feet. "And that's this sword?"
"It is the sword of the Archangel Michael, commander of the armies of heaven. It possesses the power of heaven's fire. Strike your enemy with this, and it will burn the evil out of him. If he is more evil than good, more hells than heavens, it will also burn the life from him. It will most certainly sever his bond with your friend, and it can harm only one of them at a time."
Simon bent down and picked the sword up. It sent a shock through his hand, up his arm, into his motionless heart. Instinctively, he raised it, and the clouds above seemed to part for a moment, a ray of light arcing down to strike the dull metal of the sword and make it sing. The angel looked down upon him with cold eyes. "The name of the sword cannot be spoken by your meager human tongue. You may call it glorious."
"I," Simon began.
"Thank you."
"Do not thank me. I would have killed you, Daylighter, but your mark, and now my vow, prevent it. The mark of Cain was meant to be placed upon you by God, and it was not. It shall be wiped from your brow, its protection removed. And if you call upon me again, I will not help you."
Instantly, the beam of light shining down from the clouds intensified, striking the sword like a whip of fire, surrounding Simon in a cage of brilliant light and heat. The sword burned. He cried out and fell to the ground, pain lacing through his head. It felt as if someone were jabbing a red-hot needle between his eyes. He covered his face, burying his head in his arms, letting the pain wash over him. It was the worst agony he had felt since the night he had died. It faded slowly, ebbing like the tide. He rolled onto his back, staring up, his head still aching. The black clouds were beginning to roll back, showing a widening strip of blue. The angel was gone, the lake surging under the growing light as if the water were boiling. Simon began to sit up slowly. His eyes squinted painfully against the sun. He could see someone racing down the path from the farmhouse to the lake. Someone with long black hair and a purple jacket that flew out behind her like wings. She hit the end of the path and leaped onto the lakeside, her boots kicking up puffs of sand behind her. She reached him and threw herself down, wrapping her arms around him. "Simon," she whispered. He could feel the strong, steady beat of Isabel's heart. "I thought you were dead," she went on. "I saw you fall down, and I thought you were dead." Simon let her hold him, propping himself up on his hands. He realized he was listing like a ship with a hole in the side, and tried not to move. He was afraid that if he did, he would fall over.
"I am dead."
"I know," Izzy snapped. "I mean more dead than usual." "Is." He raised his face to hers. She was kneeling over him, her legs around his, her arms around his neck. It looked uncomfortable. He let himself fall back into the sand, taking her with him. He thumped down onto his back in the cold sand with her on top of him and stared up into her black eyes. They seemed to take up the whole sky. She touched his forehead in wonder. "Your mark's gone." Raziel took it away in exchange for the sword. He gestured toward the blade. Up at the farmhouse, he could see two dark specks standing in front of the sun porch, watching them. Alec and Magnus. "It's the Archangel Michael's sword. It's called Glorious." "Simon," she kissed his cheek. "You did it. You got the angel. You got the sword." Magnus and Alec had started down the path to the lake. Simon closed his eyes, exhausted. Isabel leaned over him, her hair brushing the sides of his face. "Don't try to talk." She smelled like tears. "You're not cursed anymore," she whispered. "You're not cursed." Simon linked his fingers with hers. He felt as if he were floating on a dark river, the shadows closing in around him. Only her hand anchored him to earth. "I know." Chapter 19. Love and Blood. Methodically and carefully, Clary was tearing Jace's room apart. She was still in her tank top, though she'd pulled on a pair of jeans. Her hair was scraped behind her head in a messy bun, and her nails were powdered with dust. She had searched under his bed, in all the drawers and cabinets, crawled under the wardrobe and desk, and looked in the pockets of all his clothes for a second Steely, but she had found nothing. She had told Sebastian she was exhausted, that she needed to go upstairs and lie down. He had seemed distracted, and had waved her away. Images of Jace's face kept flashing behind her eyelids every time she shut her eyes. The way he had looked at her, betrayed, as if he didn't know her anymore. But there was no point dwelling on that. She could sit on the edge of the bed and cry into her hands, thinking about what she had done, but it would do no one any good. She owed it to Jace, to herself, to keep moving, searching. If she could just find a Steely. She was lifting the mattress off the bed, searching the space between it and the box springs, when a knock came on the door. She dropped the mattress, though not before discerning there was nothing under it. She tightened her hands into fists, took a deep breath, stalked the door, and threw it open. Sebastian stood on the threshold. For the first time, he was wearing something other than black and white. The same black trousers and boots, admittedly, but he also wore a scarlet leather tunic, intricately worked with gold and silver runes, and held together by a row of metal clasps around the front. There were hammered silver bracelets on each of his wrists, and he wore the Morgenstern ring. She blinked at him.
Red?
Ceremonial, he replied. Colors mean different things to shadow hunters than they do to humans. He said the word humans with contempt. You know the old Nephilim children's rhyme, don't you? Black for hunting through the night, for death and sorrow the colors white, gold for a bride in her wedding gown, and red to call enchantment down.
Shadowhunters get married in gold? Clary said. Not that she cared particularly, but she was trying to wedge her body into the gap between the door and the frame so that he couldn't look behind her and see the mess she'd made out of Jace's normally neat room.
Sorry to crush your dreams of a white wedding, he grinned at her. Speaking of which, I brought you something to wear.
He drew his hand out from behind his back. He was holding a folded item of clothing.
She took it from him and let it unroll. It was a long, drifting column of scarlet fabric with an odd golden sheen to the material, like the edge of a flame. The straps were gold.
Our mother used to wear this to circle ceremonies, before she betrayed our father, he said. Put it on. I want you to wear it tonight.
Tonight?
Well, you can hardly go to the ceremony in what you're wearing now.
His eyes raked her, from her bare feet to the tank top clinging to her body with sweat, to her dusty jeans.
How you look tonight, the impression you make on our new acolytes, is important.
Put it on.
Her mind was whirling.
The ceremony tonight. Our new acolytes.
How much time do I have to get ready? She asked.
An hour, perhaps, he said. We should be at the sacred site by midnight. The others will be gathering there.
It wouldn't do to be late.
An hour.
Heart hammering, Clary threw the garment across the bed, where it glimmered like chainmail. When she turned back, he was still in the doorway, a half-smile on his face, as if he intended to wait there while she changed. She moved to shut the door. He caught her wrist.
Tonight, he said, you call me Jonathan. Jonathan Morgenstern. Your brother.
A shudder ran over her whole body, and she dropped her eyes, hoping he couldn't see the hatred in them.
Whatever you say.
The moment he was gone, she reached for one of Jace's leather jackets. She slipped it on, taking comfort in the warmth and the familiar smell of him. She slid her feet into shoes and crept out into the hallway, wishing for a steely and a new soundless rune. She could hear water running downstairs and Sebastian's off-key whistling. But her own footsteps still sounded like cannon explosions in her ears. She crept along, keeping close to the wall, until she reached Sebastian's door and slid inside. It was dim, the only illumination the ambient city light coming from the windows, whose curtains were pulled back. It was a mess, just as it had been the first time she'd been in it. She started with his closet, stuffed full of expensive clothes, silk shirts, leather jackets, Armani suits, Bruno Magli shoes. On the floor of the closet was a white shirt, wadded up and stained with blood, blood old enough to have dried to brown. Clary looked at it for a long moment and shut the closet door. She set herself to the desk next, pulling out drawers, rifling through papers. She'd rather hoped for something simple, like a lined piece of notebook paper with "My Evil Plan" written across the top, but no luck. There were dozens of papers with complex numerical and alchemical figuring on them, and even a piece of stationery that began "My Beautiful One" in Sebastian's cramped handwriting. She spared a moment to wonder who on earth Sebastian's beautiful one could be. She hadn't thought of him as someone who ever had romantic feelings about anyone, before turning to the nightstand by his bed. She pulled open the drawer. Inside were a stack of notes. On top of them, something glimmered, something circular and metallic. Her fairy ring. Isabel sat with her arm around Simon as they drove back toward Brooklyn. He was exhausted, his head throbbing, his body pierced with aches. Though Magnus had given him back his ring at the lake, he had been unable to reach Clary with it. Worst of all, he was hungry. He liked how close Isabel was sitting to him, the way she rested her hand just above the crook of his elbow, tracing patterns there, sometimes sliding her fingers down to his wrist. But the scent of her, perfume and blood, made his stomach growl. It was starting to grow dark outside, the late autumn sunset coming soon on the heels of the day, dimming the interior of the truck's cab. Alex and Magnus's voices were murmurs in the shadows. Simon let his eyes flutter closed, seeing the angel printed against the back of his eyelids, a burst of white light.
Simon! Clary's voice exploded inside his head, jerking him instantly awake. Are you there?
A sharp gasp escaped his lips.
Clary? I was so worried. Sebastian took my ring away from me. Simon, there may not be much time. I have to tell you, they have a second mortal cup. They plan to raise Lilith and create an army of dark shadow hunters. Ones with the same powers as the Nephilim, but allied to the demon world.
You're kidding me, Simon said. It took him a moment to realize he'd spoken aloud. Isabel stirred against him, and Magnus looked over curiously. You all right there, vampire?
It's Clary, Simon said.
All three of them looked at him with identical astonished expressions.
She's trying to talk to me.
He slapped his hands over his ears, slumping down in his seat and trying to concentrate on her words.
When are they going to do it?
Tonight.
Soon. I don't know where we are exactly, but it's about 10 p.m. here. Then you're about 5 hours ahead of us. Are you in Europe? I can't even guess. Sebastian mentioned something called the Seventh Sacred Site. I don't know what that is, but I found some of his notes, and apparently it's an ancient tomb. It looks like a sort of doorway, and demons can be summoned through it. Clary, I've never heard of anything like that, but Magnus or the others might. Please, Simon, tell them as quickly as you can. Sebastian's going to resurrect Lilith. He wants war, a total war with the Shadow Hunters. He has about 40 or 50 Nephilim ready to follow him. They'll be there. Simon, he wants to burn the world down. We have to do anything we can to stop him. If things are that dangerous, you need to get yourself out of there.
She sounded tired.
I'm trying, but it might be too late.
Simon was dimly aware that everyone else in the truck was staring at him, concern on their faces. He didn't care. Clary's voice in his mind was like a rope tossed over a chasm, and if he could grip his end of it, maybe he could pull her to safety, or at least keep her from slipping away.
Clary, listen. I can't tell you how. It's too long a story. But we have a weapon. It could be used on either Jace or Sebastian without hurting the other. And according to the person who gave it to us, it might be able to cut them apart.
Cut them apart?
How? He said it would burn all the evil out of the one we used it on. So if we used it on Sebastian, I'm guessing, it would burn away the bond between them because the bond is evil.
Simon felt his head throb and hoped he sounded more confident than he did.
I'm not sure. It's very powerful anyway. It's called Glorious. And you'd use it on Sebastian? It would burn them apart without killing them? Well, that's the idea. I mean, there is some chance it would destroy Sebastian. It would depend on if there's any good left in him. If he's more hells than heavens, I think is what the angel said.
The angel?
Her alarm was palpable. Simon, what if you...
Her voice broke off, and Simon was suddenly filled with a clamor of emotion, Surprise, anger, terror, pain. He cried out, sitting bolt upright. "Clary?" But there was only silence ringing in his head. "Clary!" he cried out. And then, aloud, he said, "Damn, she's gone again." "What happened?" Isabel demanded. "Is she all right? What's going on?" "I think we have a lot less time than we thought," Simon said, in a voice much calmer than he felt. "Magnus, pull the truck over. We have to talk."
"So," Sebastian said, filling the doorway as he looked down at Clary.
"Would it be deja vu if I asked you what you were doing in my room, little sister?"
Clary swallowed against her suddenly dry throat. The light in the hallway was bright behind Sebastian, turning him into a silhouette. She couldn't see the expression on his face.
"Looking for you?" she hazarded. "You're sitting on my bed," he said. "Did you think I was under it?"
He walked into the room, sauntered, really, as if he knew something she didn't, something no one else knew.
"So why were you looking for me? And why haven't you changed for the ceremony?"
"The dress," she said, "it doesn't fit."
"Of course it fits," he said, sitting down on the bed beside her.
He turned to face her, his back to the headboard. "Everything else in that room fits you. This should fit you, too. It's silk and chiffon. It doesn't stretch.
You're a skinny little thing. It shouldn't have to."
He took her right wrist, and she curled her fingers in, desperately trying to hide the ring.
"Look, my fingers go right around your wrist."
His skin felt hot against hers, sending sharp prickles through her nerves. She remembered the way, in Idris, his touch had burned her like acid. "The seventh sacred site," she said, not looking at him.
"Is that where Jace went?"
"Yes. I sent him ahead. He's readying things for our arrival. We'll meet him there." Her heart dived in her chest.
"He's not coming back?"
"Not before the ceremony." She caught the curling edge of Sebastian's smile.
"Which is good, because he'd be so disappointed when I told him about this."
He slid his hand swiftly over hers, uncurling her fingers. The gold ring blazed there like a signal fire.
"Did you think I wouldn't recognize fairy work?
Do you think the queen is such a fool that she would send you off to retrieve these for her without knowing you would keep them for yourself? She wanted you to bring this here, where I would find it." He jerked the ring off her finger with a smirk.
"You've been in contact with the queen?" Clary demanded.
"How?"
"With this ring," Sebastian purred, and Clary remembered the queen saying in her high, sweet voice, "Jonathan Morganstern could be a powerful ally. The fair folk are an old people. We do not make hasty decisions, but wait to see in what direction the wind blows first."
"Do you really think she'd let you get your hands on something that would let you communicate with your little friend without her being able to listen in? Since I took it from you, I've spoken to her. She's spoken to me. You were a fool to trust her, little sister. She likes to be on the winning side of things, the Seelie Queen. And that side will be ours, Clary. Ours." His voice was low and soft.
"Forget them, your shadow hunter friends. Your place is with us, with me. Your blood cries out for power like mine does. Whatever your mother may have done to twist your conscience, you know who you are."
His hand caught at her wrist again, pulling her toward him.
"Jocelyn made all the wrong decisions. She sided with the Clave against her family. This is your chance to rectify her mistake."
She tried to pull her arm back.
"Let me go, Sebastian. I mean it."
His hand slid up from her wrist, encircling her upper arm with his fingers.
You're such a little thing. Who'd think you were such a spitfire, especially in bed?
She leapt to her feet, jerking away from him.
What did you just say?
He rose as well, his lips curving up at the corners. He was so much taller than she was, almost exactly as much taller as Jace was. He leaned in close to her when he spoke, and his voice was low and rough.
Everything that marks Jace marks me, he said, down to your fingernails. He was grinning. 8 parallel scratches on my back, little sister. Are you saying you didn't put them there?
A soft explosion went off in her head, like a dull firework of rage. She looked at his laughing face, and she thought of Jace, and of Simon, and the words they'd just exchanged. If the Queen really could eavesdrop on their conversations, then she might know about Glorious already. But Sebastian didn't know, couldn't know. She snatched the ring from his hand and threw it to the ground. She heard him give a shout, but she'd already brought her foot down on it, feeling it give way, the gold smashing to powder. He looked at her incredulously as she drew her foot back.
You!
She drew back her right hand, the strongest one, and drove her fist into his stomach. He was taller, broader, and stronger than she was, but she had the element of surprise. He doubled over, choking, and she snatched the steely from his weapons belt. Then she ran. Magnus jerked the wheel to the side so fast that the tires screeched. Isabel shrieked. They bumped up onto the shoulder of the road, under the shadow of a copse of partly leafless trees. The next thing Simon knew, the doors were open and everyone was tumbling out onto the blacktop. The sun was going down, and the headlights of the truck were on, lighting them all in an eerie glow. All right, vampire boy, said Magnus, shaking his head hard enough to shed glitter. What the hell is going on? Alec leaned against the truck as Simon explained, repeating the conversation with Clary as accurately as he could before the whole thing flew out of his head. Did she say anything about getting her and Jace out of there? Isabel asked when he was done, her face pale in the yellowish glow from the headlights. No, said Simon. And Iz, I don't think Jace wants to get out. He wants to be where he is. Isabel crossed her arms and looked down at her boots, her black hair sweeping across her face. What's this 7th sacred site business? Said Alec. I know about the 7 wonders of the world, but 7 sacred sites? They're more in the interest of warlocks than Nephilim, said Magnus. Each is a place where key lines converge, forming a matrix, a sort of net within which magical spells are amplified. The 7th is a stone tomb in Ireland. The name means the Cavern of Sorrows. It's in a very bleak, uninhabited area called the Burren. A good place to raise a demon, if it's a big one. He tugged at a spike of hair. This is bad. Really bad. You think he could do it? Make dark shadow hunters? Simon asked. Everything has an alliance, Simon. The alliance of the Nephilim is seraphic, but if it were demonic, they'd still be as strong, as powerful as they are now. But they would be dedicated to the eradication of mankind instead of its salvation. We have to get there, Isabel said. We have to stop them. Him, you mean, said Alec. We have to stop him, Sebastian. Jace is his ally now. You have to accept that, Alec, Magnus said. A light misty drizzle had begun to fall. The drops gleamed gold in the headlights' glow. Ireland is 5 hours ahead. They're doing the ceremony at midnight. It's 5 o'clock here. We have an hour and a half, 2 hours at most, to stop them. Then we shouldn't be waiting. We should be going, Isabel said, a tinge of panic in her voice. If we're going to stop him... Iz,
There are only 4 of us, Alex said. We don't even know what kind of numbers we're up against. Simon glanced at Magnus, who was watching Alec and Isabel argue with a peculiarly detached expression.
Magnus, Simon said,
why didn't we just portal to the farm?
You portaled half of Idris to the Brosselin Plain.
I wanted to give you enough time to change your mind, said Magnus, not taking his eyes off his boyfriend.
But we can portal from here, Simon said. I mean, you could do that for us.
Yeah, said Magnus. But like Alex says, we don't know what we're up against in terms of numbers. I'm a pretty powerful warlock, but Jonathan Morgenstern is no ordinary shadow hunter, and neither is Jace for that matter. And if they succeed in raising Lilith, she'll be a lot weaker than she was, but she's still Lilith.
But she's dead, said Isabel.
Simon killed her.
Greater demons don't die, said Magnus.
Simon scattered her between worlds. It will take a long time for her to reform, and she will be weak for years, unless Sebastian calls her up again.
He pushed a hand through his wet, spiked hair.
We have the sword, Isabel said. We can take out Sebastian. We have Magnus and Simon.
We don't even know if the sword will work, said Alec.
And it won't do us much good if we can't get to Sebastian. And Simon isn't even Mr. Indestructible anymore. He can be killed just like the rest of us.
They all looked at Simon.
We have to try, he said.
Look, we don't know how many are going to be there, no.
We have a little time, not a lot, but enough. If we portal to grab some reinforcements...
Reinforcements from where? Isabel demanded.
I'll go to Maya and Jordan back at the apartment, said Simon, his mind quickly ticking over possibilities. See if Jordan can get any assistance from the Praetor Lupus. Magnus, go to the downtown police station, see about enlisting whatever members of the pack are around. Isabel and Alec.
You're splitting us up? Isabel demanded, her voice rising.
What about fire messages, or...
No one's going to trust a fire message about something like this, said Magnus.
And besides, fire messages are for shadow hunters. Do you really want to communicate this information to the clay via fire message instead of going to the Institute yourself?
Fine. Isabel stalked around to the side of the car. She yanked the door open, but didn't get inside. Instead, she reached in and drew out Glorious. It shone in the dim light like a bolt of dark lightning. The words carved on the blade flickered in the car light.
Quisat Deus?
The rain was starting to paste Isabel's black hair to her neck. She looked formidable as she walked back to rejoin the group.
Then we leave the car here. We split up. But we meet back at the Institute in an hour. That's when we leave. Whoever we have with us.
She met each of her companions' eyes, one by one, daring them to challenge her.
Simon, take this.
She held out Glorious to him, hilt forward.
Me?
Simon was startled. But I haven't really used a sword before.
You called it down, Isabel said, her dark eyes glossy in the rain.
The angel gave it to you, Simon. And you will be the one who carries it.
Clary dashed down the hallway and hit the steps with a clatter, racing for the downstairs and for the spot on the wall that Jace had told her was the only entrance and exit from the apartment. She had no illusions that she could escape. She needed only a few moments to do what had to be done. She heard Sebastian's boots loud on the glass staircase behind her and put on a burst of speed, almost slamming into the wall. She jammed the stele into it, point first, drawing frantically, a pattern as simple as a cross, new to the world. Sebastian's fist closed on the back of her jacket, jerking her backward, the stele flying out of her hand. She gasped as he swung her up off her feet and slammed her into the wall, knocking the breath out of her. He glanced at the mark she had made on the wall, and his lips curled into a sneer.
"The opening rune?" he said. He leaned forward and hissed into her ear. And you didn't even finish it. Not that it matters. Do you really think there's a place on this earth you could go where I couldn't find you? Clary responded with an epithet that would have gotten her kicked out of class at St. Xavier's. Just as he started to laugh, she raised her hand and slapped him across the face so hard her fingers stung. In his surprise, he loosened his grip on her, and she jerked away from him and flipped herself over the table, making for the downstairs bedroom, which at least had a lock on the door. And he was in front of her, grabbing the lapels of her jacket and swinging her around. Her feet went out from under her, and she would have fallen if he hadn't pinned her to the wall with his body, his arms to either side, making a cage around her. His grin was diabolical. Gone was the stylish boy who'd strolled by the Seine with her and drunk hot chocolate and talked about belonging. His eyes were all black, no pupil, like tunnels. "What's wrong, little sis? You look upset." She could barely catch her breath. "Cracked my nail polish slapping your worthless face. See?" She showed him her finger, just one of them. "Cute," he snorted. "You know how I knew you'd betray us? How I knew you wouldn't be able to help it? Because you're too much like me." He pressed her back harder against the wall. She could feel his chest rise and fall against hers. She was at eye level with the straight, sharp line of his collarbone. His body felt like a prison around hers, pinning her in place. "I'm nothing like you. Let me go!" "You're everything like me," he growled into her ear. "You infiltrated us. You faked friendship, faked caring." "I never had to fake caring about Jace." She saw something flash in his eyes then, a dark jealousy. And she wasn't even sure who he was jealous of. He put his lips against her cheek, close enough that she felt them move against her skin when he spoke. "You screwed us over," he murmured. His hand was around her left arm like a vice. Slowly he began to move it down. Probably literally screwed Jace over. She couldn't help it. She flinched. She felt him inhale sharply. "You did," he said. "You slept with him." He sounded almost betrayed. "It's none of your business." He caught at her face, turning her to look at him, fingers digging into her chin. "You can't screw someone into being good. Nicely heartless move, though." His lovely mouth curved into a cold smile. "You know he doesn't remember any of it, right? Did he show you a good time, at least? Because I would have." She tasted bile in her throat. "You're my brother." "Those words don't mean anything where we're concerned. We aren't human. Their rules don't apply to us. Stupid laws about what DNA can be mixed with what. Hypocritical, really, considering. We're already experiments. The rulers of ancient Egypt used to marry their siblings, you know. Cleopatra married her brother. Strengthens the bloodline." She looked at him with loathing. "I knew you were crazy," she said. "But I didn't realize you were absolutely, spectacularly out of your goddamn mind." "Oh, I don't think there's anything crazy about it. Who do we belong to but each other?" "Jace," she said. "I belong with Jace." He made a dismissive noise. "You can have Jace." "I thought you needed him." "I do. But not for what you need him for." His hands were suddenly on her waist. "We can share him. I don't care what you do, as long as you know you belong to me." She raised her hands, meaning to shove him away. "I don't belong to you. I belong to me." The look in his eyes froze her in place. "I think you know better than that," he said. And brought his mouth down on hers, hard. For a moment, she was back in Idris, standing in front of the burned Fairchild Manor, and Sebastian was kissing her, and she felt as if she were falling into darkness, into a tunnel that had no end. At the time, she thought there was something wrong with her, that she couldn't kiss anyone but Jace, that she was broken. Now she knew better. Sebastian's mouth moved on hers, as hard and cold as a razor slice in the dark, and she raised herself up on the tips of her toes and bit down hard on his lip. He yelled and spun away from her, his hand to his mouth. She could taste his blood, bitter copper. It dripped down his chin as he stared at her with incredulous eyes. "You!" She whirled and kicked him, hard, in the stomach, hoping it was still sore from where she'd punched him before. As he doubled over, she shot by him, running for the stairs. She was halfway there when she felt him grab her by the back of her collar. He swung her around as if he were swinging a baseball bat and flung her at the wall. She hit it, hard, and sank to her knees, the breath knocked out of her. Sebastian started toward her, his hands flexing at his sides, his eyes shimmering black like a shark's. He looked terrifying. Clary knew she ought to be frightened, but a cold, glassy detachment had come over her. Time seemed to have slowed. She remembered the fight in the junk shop in Prague, how she had disappeared into her own world, where each movement was as precise as the movement of a watch. Sebastian reached down toward her, and she pushed up, off the ground, sweeping her legs sideways, knocking his feet out from under him. He fell forward, and she rolled out of the way, bouncing to her feet. She didn't bother trying to run this time. Instead, she grabbed the porcelain vase off the table, and as Sebastian rose to his feet, swung it at his head. It shattered, spraying water and leaves, and he staggered back, blood blooming against his white silver hair. He snarled and sprang at her. It was like being slammed by a wrecking ball. Clary flew backwards, smashing through the glass tabletop, and hit the ground in an explosion of shards and agony. She screamed as Sebastian landed on top of her, driving her body down into the shattered glass, his lips drawn back in a snarl. He brought his arm down, backhanded, and cracked her across the face. Blood blinded her. She choked on the taste of it in her mouth, and its salt stung her eyes. She jerked up her knee, catching him in the stomach, but it was like kicking a wall. He grabbed her hands, forcing them down by her sides. "Clary, Clary, Clary," he said. He was gasping. At least she'd winded him. Blood ran in a slow trickle from a gash on the side of his head, staining his hair scarlet. Not bad. You weren't much of a fighter back in Idris. "Get off me!" He moved his face close to hers. His tongue darted out. She tried to jerk away, but couldn't move fast enough as he licked the blood off the side of her face and grinned. The grin split his lip, and more blood ran in a trickle down his chin. "You asked me who I belong to," he whispered. "I belong to you. Your blood is my blood, your bones my bones. The first time you saw me, I looked familiar, didn't I? Just like you looked familiar to me." She gaped at him. "You're out of your mind." "It's in the Bible," he said. "The Song of Solomon. Thou hast ravished my heart, my sister, my spouse. Thou hast ravished my heart with one of thine eyes, with one chain of thy neck." His fingers brushed her throat, looping into the chain there, the chain that had held the Morgenstern ring. She wondered if he would crush her windpipe. "I sleep, but my heart waketh. It is the voice of my beloved that knocketh, saying, Open to me, my sister, my love." His blood dripped onto her face. She held herself still, her body humming with the effort, as his hand slipped from her throat, along her side to her waist. His fingers slid inside the waistband of her jeans. His skin was hot, burning. She could feel that he wanted her. "You don't love me," she said. Her voice was thin. He was crushing the air from her lungs. She remembered what her mother had said, that every emotion Sebastian showed was a pretense. Her thoughts were clear as crystal. She silently thanked the battle euphoria for doing what it had to do in keeping her focused while Sebastian sickened her with his touch. "And you don't care that I'm your brother," he said. "I know how you felt about Jace, even when you thought he was your brother. You can't lie to me. Jace is better than you." "No one's better than me," he grinned, all white teeth and blood. "A garden enclosed is my sister," he said. "A spring shut up, a fountain sealed. But not anymore, right? Jace took care of that." He fumbled at the button on her jeans, and she took advantage of his distraction to seize up a good-sized triangular piece of glass from the ground and slam the jagged edge of it into his shoulder. The glass slid along her fingers, slicing them open. He yelled, jerking back, but more in surprise than pain. The gear protected him. She slashed the glass down harder, this time into his thigh, and when he reared back, she drove her other elbow into his throat. He went sideways, choking, and she rolled, pinning him under her as she yanked the bloody glass free of his leg. She drove the shard down toward the pulsing vein in his neck and stopped. He was laughing. He lay under her, and he was laughing, his laughter vibrating up through her own body. His skin was spattered with blood, her blood, dripping down on him, his own blood where she had cut him. His silver-white hair matted with it. He let his arms fall to either side of him, outstretched like wings, a broken angel fallen out of the sky. He said, "Kill me, little sister. Kill me, and you killed Jace, too." She brought the glass shard down. Chapter 20. A Door into the Dark. Clary screamed aloud in pure frustration as the shard of glass embedded itself in the wooden floor, inches from Sebastian's throat. She felt him laugh underneath her. "You can't do it," he said. "You can't kill me." "To hell with you," she snarled. "I can't kill Jace." "Same thing," he said, and sitting up so fast she barely saw him move, he belted her across the face with enough force to send her skidding across the glass-strewn floor. Her slide was arrested when she hit the wall, gagged, and coughed blood. She buried her head against her forearm, the taste and smell of her own blood everywhere, sickening and metallic. A moment later, Sebastian's hand was fisted in her jacket, and he was hauling her to her feet. She didn't fight him. What was the point? Why fight someone when they were willing to kill you and they knew you weren't willing to kill or even seriously wound them? They'd always win. She stood still as he examined her. "Could be worse," he said. "Looks like the jacket kept you from any real damage." "Real damage?" Her body felt like it had been sliced all over with thin knives. She glared at him through her eyelashes as he swung her up into his arms. It was like it had been in Paris, when he'd carried her away from the Dahak demons. But then she had been, if not grateful, at least confused. And now she was filled with a boiling hatred. She kept her body tense while he carried her upstairs, his boots ringing on the glass. She was trying to forget she was touching him, that his arm was under her thighs, his hands possessive on her back. "I will kill him," she thought. "I will find a way, and I will kill him." He walked into Jace's room and dumped her onto the floor. She staggered back a step. He caught her and ripped the jacket off her. Underneath, she was wearing only a t-shirt. It was shredded as if she'd run a cheese grater over it and stained everywhere with blood. Sebastian whistled.
"You're a mess, little sister," he said. "Better get in the bathroom and wash some of that blood off."
"No," she said. "Let them see me like this. Let them see what you had to do to get me to come with you."
His hand shot out and grabbed her under the chin, forcing her face up to his. Their faces were inches apart. She wanted to close her eyes, but refused to give him the satisfaction. She stared back at him, at the loops of silver in his black eyes, the blood on his lip where she'd bitten him.
"You belong to me," he said again. "And I will have you by my side, however I have to force you to be there."
"Why?" she demanded, rage as bitter on her tongue as the taste of blood.
"What do you care? I know you can't kill Jace, but you could kill me. Why don't you just do it?"
Just for a moment, his eyes went distant, glassy, as if he were seeing something invisible to her. "This world will be consumed by hellfire," he said. "But I will bring you and Jay safely through the flames if you only do what I ask. It is a grace I extend to no one else. Do you not see how foolish you are to reject it?"
"Jonathan," she said, "don't you see how impossible it is to ask me to fight by your side when you want to burn down the world?"
His eyes refocused on her face.
"But why?"
It was almost plaintive. "Why is this world so precious to you? You know there are others." His own blood was very red against his stark white skin.
"Tell me you love me. Tell me you love me and will fight with me."
"I'll never love you. You were wrong when you said we had the same blood. Your blood is poison, demon blood." She spat the last words. He only smiled, his eyes glowing darkly. She felt something burn on her upper arm, and she jumped before she realized it was a Steely. He was tracing an Arazi on her skin. She hated him even as the pain faded. His bracelet clanked on his wrist as he moved his hand skillfully, completing the rune. "I knew you lied," she said to him suddenly.
"I tell so many lies, sweetheart," he said.
"Which one specifically?"
"Your bracelet," she said.
"Acoronta movebo. It doesn't mean thus always to tyrants. That's sic semper tyrannis. This is from Virgil. Flectere sine queo superos acoronta movebo. If I cannot move heaven, I will raise hell."
"Your Latin's better than I thought."
"I learn fast. Not fast enough." He released his grip on her chin. "Now get into the bathroom and clean yourself up," he said, shoving her backward. He gripped her mother's ceremonial dress off the bed and dumped it into her arms. "Time grows short, and my patience wears thin. If you're not out in 10 minutes, I'll come in after you. And trust me, you won't like that."
"I'm starving," Maya said. "I feel like I haven't eaten in days."
She pulled the refrigerator door open and peered in.
"Oh, yuck."
Jordan pulled her back, wrapping his arms around her, and nuzzled the back of her neck.
"We can order food. Pizza, Thai, Mexican, whatever you want. As long as it doesn't cost more than $25.
She turned around in his arms, laughing. She was wearing one of his shirts. It was a little too big on him, and on her it hung nearly to her knees. Her hair was pulled up in a knot at the back of her neck.
"Big spender," she said.
"For you, anything." He lifted her up by the waist and set her on one of the counter stools.
"You can have a taco."
He kissed her. His lips were sweet, slightly minty from toothpaste. She felt the buzz in her body that came from touching him, that started at the base of her spine and shot through all her nerves.
She giggled against his mouth, wrapping her arms around his neck. A sharp ringing cut through the humming in her blood as Jordan pulled away, frowning. My phone. Hanging on to her with one hand, he fumbled behind him on the counter until he found it. It had stopped ringing, but he lifted it anyway, frowning. It's the Praetor. The Praetor never called, or at least rarely, only when something was of deadly importance. Maya sighed and leaned back. Take it. He nodded, already lifting the phone to his ear. His voice was a soft murmur in the back of her consciousness as she jumped down from the counter and went to the refrigerator, where the takeout menus were pinned. She riffled through them until she found the menu for the local Thai place she liked, and turned around with it in her hand. Jordan was now standing in the middle of the living room, white-faced, with his phone forgotten in his hand. Maya could hear a tiny, distant voice coming from it, saying his name. Maya dropped the menu and hurried across the room to him. She took the phone out of his hand, disconnected the call, and set it on the counter. Jordan? What happened? My roommate. Nick. You remember? He said, disbelief in his hazel eyes. You never met him, but... I saw the photos of him, she said. Has something happened? He's dead. How? Throat torn out, all his blood gone. They think he tracked his assignment down and she killed him. Maureen? Maya was shocked. But she was just a little girl. She's a vampire now. He took a ragged breath. Maya. She stared at him. His eyes were glassy, his hair tousled. A sudden panic rose inside her. Kissing and cuddling and even sex were one thing. Comforting someone when they were stricken with loss was something else. It meant commitment. It meant caring. It meant you wanted to ease their pain, and at the same time you were thanking God that whatever the bad thing was that had happened, it hadn't happened to them. Jordan, she said softly, and reaching up on her toes, she put her arms around him. I'm sorry. Jordan's heart beat hard against hers. Nick was only 17. He was a Praetor, like you, she said softly. He knew it was dangerous. You're only 18. He tightened his grip on her, but said nothing. Jordan, she said, I love you. I love you, and I'm sorry. She felt him freeze. It was the first time she'd said the words since a few weeks before she'd been bitten. He seemed to be holding his breath. Finally, he let it out with a gasp. Maya, he croaked. And then, unbelievably, before he could say another word, her phone rang. Never mind, she said. I'll ignore it. He let her go, his face soft, bemused with grief and amazement. No, he said. No, it could be important. You go ahead. She sighed and went to the counter. It had stopped ringing by the time she reached it, but there was a text message blinking on the screen. She felt her stomach muscles tighten. What is it? Jordan asked, as if he had sensed her sudden tension. Maybe he had. A 911. An emergency. She turned to him, holding the phone. A call to battle. It went out to everyone in the pack, from Luke and Magnus. We have to leave right away. Clary sat on the floor of Jace's bathroom, her back against the tile of the tub, her legs stretched out in front of her. She had cleaned the blood from her face and body and rinsed her bloody hair in the sink. She was wearing her mother's ceremonial dress, rucked up to her thighs, and the tile floor was cold against her bare feet and calves. She looked down at her hands. They ought to look different, she thought. But they were the same hands she'd always had, thin fingers, squared-off nails. You didn't want long nails when you were an artist, and freckles on the back of her knuckles. Her face looked the same, too. All of her seemed to be the same, but she wasn't. These past few days had changed her in ways she couldn't quite yet fully comprehend. She stood up and looked at herself in the mirror. She was pale. Between the flame colors of her hair and the dress, bruises decorated her shoulders and throat.
"Admiring yourself?"
She hadn't heard Sebastian open the door, but there he was, smirking intolerably as always, propped against the frame of the door. He was wearing a kind of gear she had never seen before, the usual tough material, but in a scarlet color, like fresh blood. He had also added an accessory to his outfit, a recurved crossbow. He held it casually in one hand, though it must have been heavy.
"You look lovely, sister, a fitting companion for me."
She bit back her words with a taste of blood that still lingered in her mouth and walked toward him. He caught at her arm as she tried to squeeze past him in the doorway. His hand ran over her bare shoulder.
"Good," he said. "You're not marked here. I hate it when women ruin their skin with scars. Keep the marks on your arms and legs."
"I'd rather you didn't touch me." He snorted and swung the crossbow up. A bolt was fitted to it, ready to fire.
"Walk," he said. "I'll be right behind you."
It took every ounce of effort she had not to flinch away from him. She turned and walked toward the door, feeling a burning between her shoulder blades where she imagined the arrow of the crossbow was trained. They moved like that down the glass stairs and through the kitchen and living room. He grunted at the sight of Clary's scrawled rune on the wall, reached around her, and under his hand a doorway appeared. The door itself swung open onto a square of darkness. The crossbow jabbed Clary hard in the back.
"Move."
Taking a deep breath, she stepped out into the shadows. Alex slammed his hand against the button in the small cage elevator and slumped back against the wall.
"How much time do we have?"
Isabel checked the glowing screen on her mobile phone. "About 40 minutes." The elevator lurched upward. Isabel cast a covert glance at her brother. He looked tired. Dark circles were under his eyes. Despite his heightened strength, Alec, with his blue eyes and soft black hair almost to his collar, looked more delicate than he was.
"I'm fine," he said, answering her unspoken question.
"You're the one who's going to be in trouble for staying away from home. I am over 18. I can do what I want." "I texted Mom every night and told her I was with you and Magnus," Isabel said as the elevator came to a stop. "It's not like she didn't know where I was. And speaking of Magnus..." Alec reached across her and pulled the elevator's inside cage door open.
"What?
Are you two okay? I mean, getting along all right?" Alec shot her an incredulous look as he stepped out into the entryway. "Everything's going to hell in a handbasket, and you want to know about my relationship with Magnus?"
"I've always wondered about that expression," Isabel said thoughtfully as she hurried after her brother down the hallway.
Alec had long, long legs, and though she was fast, it was hard to keep up with him when he wanted it to be.
"Why a handbasket? What is a handbasket, and why is it a particularly good form of transportation?"
Alec, who had been Jace's parabatai long enough to have learned to ignore conversational tangents, said,
"Magnus and I are okay, I guess."
"Uh-oh," Isabel said.
"Okay, you guess?"
"I know what it means when you say that. What happened? Did you have a fight?" Alec was tapping his fingers against the wall as they raced along, a sure sign that he was uncomfortable.
"Quit trying to meddle around in my love life, Iz. What about you? Why aren't you and Simon a couple? You obviously like him."
Isabel let out a squawk.
"I am not obvious."
"You are, actually," Alec said, sounding as if it surprised him too, now that he thought about it.
gazing at him all moony-eyed. The way you freaked out at the lake when the angel appeared. I thought Simon was dead. What, more dead? Said Alec unkindly. Seeing the expression on his sister's face, he shrugged. Look, if you like him, fine. I just don't see why you're not dating.
Because he doesn't like me.
Of course he does. Guys always like you.
Forgive me if I think your opinion is biased.
Isabel, Alec said. And now there was a kindness in his voice, the tone she associated with her brother. Love and exasperation mixed together. You know you're gorgeous. Guys have chased you since forever. Why would Simon be different? She shrugged. I don't know, but he is. I figure the ball is in his court. He knows how I feel, but I don't think he's rushing to do anything about it. To be fair, it's not like he doesn't have anything else going on.
I know, but he's always been like this. Clary, you think he's still in love with Clary?
Isabel chewed her lip.
Not exactly. I think she's the one thing he still has from his human life, and he can't let her go. And as long as he doesn't let her go, I don't know if there's room for me.
They had almost reached the library. Alec looked sideways at Isabel through his lashes. But if they're just friends... Alec. She held up her hand, indicating that he should be quiet. Voices were coming from the library. The first one strident and immediately recognizable as their mother's.
What do you mean she's missing?
No one's seen her in 2 days, said another voice, soft, female, and slightly apologetic. She lives alone, so people weren't sure, but we thought since you know her brother. Without a pause, Alex straight-armed the door of the library open. Isabel ducked past him to see her mother sitting behind the massive mahogany desk in the center of the room. In front of her stood 2 familiar figures, a lean Penhallow, dressed in gear, and beside her, Helen Blackthorne, her curly hair in disarray. Both of them turned, looking surprised as the door opened. Helen, beneath her freckles, was pale. She was also in gear, which drained the color out of her skin even more.
Isabel, said Maris, rising to her feet. Alexander, what's happened?
Aline reached for Helen's hand. Silver rings flashed on both their fingers. The Penhallow ring with its design of mountains glinted on Helen's finger, while the intertwined thorn pattern of the Blackthorn family ring adorned Aline's. Isabel felt her eyebrows go up. Exchanging family rings was serious business.
If we're intruding, we can go, Aline began.
No, stay, said Izzy, striding forward. We might need you. Maris settled back into her chair.
So, she said, my children grace me with their presence. Where have you 2 been?
I told you, Isabel said. We were at Magnus's.
Why? Maris demanded.
And I'm not asking you, Alexander. I'm asking my daughter.
Because the Clave stopped looking for Jace, said Isabel. But we didn't.
And Magnus was willing to help, Alec added. He's been up all these nights, searching through spellbooks, trying to figure out where Jace might be. He even raised the...
No.
Maris put up a hand to silence him.
Don't tell me. I don't want to know.
The black phone on her desk started to ring. They all stared at it. A black phone call was a call from Idris. No one moved to answer it, and in a moment, it was silent.
Why are you here?
Maris demanded, turning her attention back to her offspring.
We were looking for Jace, Isabel began. It's the Clave's job to do that, Maris snapped.
She looked tired, Isabel noticed, the skin stretched thin under her eyes. Lines at the corners of her mouth drew her lips into a frown. She was thin enough that the bones of her wrists seemed to protrude.
Not yours.
Alec slammed his hand down on the desk, hard enough to make the drawers rattle.
Would you listen to us? The Clave didn't find Jace, but we did, and Sebastian right along with him. And now we know what they're planning, and we have...
He glanced at the clock on the wall.
Barely any time to stop them. Are you going to help or not?
The black phone rang again. Again, Maris didn't even move to answer it. She was looking at Alec, her face white with shock.
You did what?
We know where Jace is, Mom, said Isabel. Or at least where he's going to be, and what he's going to do. We know Sebastian's plan, and he has to be stopped. Oh, and we know how we can kill Sebastian, but not Jace.
Stop.
Maris shook her head.
Alexander, explain.
Concisely and without hysteria, thank you. Alec launched into the story, leaving out, Isabel thought, all the good parts, which was how he managed to summarize things so neatly. As abbreviated as his rendition was, both Aline and Helen were gaping by the end of it. Maris stood very still, her features immobile. When Alec was done, she said in a hushed voice,
Why have you done these things?
Alec looked taken aback.
For Jace, Isabel said. To get him back.
You realize that by putting me in this position, you have given me no choice but to notify the Clave, said Maris, her hand resting on the black phone.
I wish you hadn't come here.
Isabel's mouth went dry.
Are you seriously mad at us for finally telling you what's going on?
If I notify the Clave, they will send all reinforcements. Gia will have no choice but to give them instructions to kill Jace on sight. Do you have any idea how many Shadowhunters Valentine's son has following him?
Alec shook his head.
Maybe 40, it sounds like.
Say we brought twice as many as that. We could be fairly confident of defeating his forces. But what kind of chance would Jace have?
There's almost no certainty he'd make it through alive.
They'll kill him just to be sure.
Then we can't tell them, said Isabel. We'll go ourselves. We'll do this without the Clave. But Maris, looking at her, was shaking her head.
The law says we have to tell them.
I don't care about the law, Isabel began angrily. She caught sight of Aline looking at her and slammed her mouth shut.
Don't worry, Aline said. I'm not going to say anything to my mother. I owe you guys. Especially you, Isabel.
She tightened her jaw, and Isabel remembered the darkness under a bridge in Idris and her whip tearing into a demon, its claws locked on Aline.
And besides, Sebastian killed my cousin, the real Sebastian Verlac. I have my own reasons to hate him, you know.
Regardless, said Maris, if we do not tell them, we will be breaking the law. We could be sanctioned, or worse.
Worse? Said Alec. What are we talking about here? Exile?
I don't know, Alexander, said his mother. It would be up to Gia Pinhallow, and whoever wins the Inquisitor's position to decide our punishment.
Maybe it'll be Dad, muttered Izzy. Maybe he'll go easy on us.
If we fail to notify them of the situation, Isabel, there's no chance your father will make Inquisitor.
None, said Maris.
Isabel took a deep breath.
Could we get our marks stripped? She said.
Could we lose the Institute?
Isabel, said Maris, we could lose everything.